You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we get to continue our series in the battle for the Augsburg Confession in 19th century America with the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie. We get to pick up where we left off last time. Cliffhanger at the breakup of the General Synod. Looking forward to picking up on that conversation today. This episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Nebraska. You can learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska by visiting CU. Joining us for this series, the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie. He's the Forrest E. and Francis H. Ellis Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. Dr. McKenzie, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So last time we started to talk about the breakup of the General Synod, particularly on the lack of commitment to the Lutheran confessions, the Augsburg Confession, and questions around that, but alluded to the fact that the Civil War also played a part in the breakup of the General Synod. Where do you want to start with that?
Well, I think we should just start with it. The Civil War, everything starts to unravel in the late 1850s, and then Lincoln is elected president in that divided election. And then he's installed in the spring of 1861. So the country is falling apart. Already by that time, some of the American Protestant denominations had already split into North and South versions of each other. You had the Methodists, you had the Presbyterians, you had the Baptists, and those really are the big Protestant denominations. And they had their two wings. It wasn't quite so bad for Lutherans because most Lutherans were in the North. But by 1861, there were eight geographic synods in the South, the states that become states of the Confederacy, and five of them were in the General Synod. Now, the General Synod had a convention in 1862. The war is now underway. It was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. None of the Southern synods showed up, which was probably just as well, because the representatives of the North who did show up passed a resolution offered by one of the confessional men named Passavant, and he was very anti-slavery. The resolution was very anti-slavery, and it condemned the South, the Confederacy, in no uncertain terms. I'll quote them. "It is the deliberate judgment of this synod, General Synod North, that the rebellion against the constitutional government of this land is most wicked in its inception, unjustified in its prosecution, oppressive in its aims, and destructive in the results to the highest interests of morality and religion. This synod cannot but express its disapprobation of the course of those synods and ministers in the open sympathy and active cooperation which they have given to the cause of treason and insurrection." So, pretty tough statement regarding the Southern Lutherans. Not too surprisingly, the Southern Lutherans decided to go their own way, and in 1863, they formed the General Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of the Confederate States of America. And of course, they passed their own resolution blasting the General Synod. On slavery, they noted their concern that there be moral relations, they said, between master and slave, but added that slavery as an American institution was not sinful. Well, what about what we've been talking about, the Augsburg Confession? Anything there? Well, not much. Here's their confessional statement. "We hold that the Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, and the Augsburg Confession contain the fundamental doctrines of the sacred scriptures, and we receive and adopt them as exponents of our faith. Inasmuch as there has always been and still is a difference of construction among us with regard to several articles of the Augsburg Confession, we allow the full and free exercise of private judgment in regard to those articles." So they're right in line with the North in terms of their attitude toward the Lutheran confessions as formally accepted by the General Synod, fundamental articles. We don't all agree on all of this stuff, but in this synod, we'll just live with those disagreements. So that's a chunk of the General Synod that is now gone. What about the chunk that remains? At this point, the tensions between the two groups over the Augsburg Confession, the Lutheran Confessions generally, are coming to a head. And they do so right when the Civil War is going on and then right after it goes on. And so that's the one I want to talk about now. So now we're back to the confessions. The story here has to do with the General Synod's convention in 1864, because lo and behold, the Francian Synod shows up again and wants to join the General Synod. They had tried in 1839, it hadn't worked. Part of the reason why it hadn't been worked was that they were extremely abolitionist. Now we're in the Civil War. The Emancipation Proclamation has been promulgated. So their view is that this should be not nearly so significant an issue. And so let's join. So 1864, York, Pennsylvania, there's a convention of the General Synod, what's left of it in the North, and the Francian Synod has their application before the Synod. Now there is a confessional wing as well as an American Lutheran wing. And so the question was, can the Francian Synod come in without saying something about the Augsburg Confession? Because they still didn't have that in their constitution. So they're Lutheran by their name, and that's it. The Credentials Committee presented to the convention, and the convention agreed that the Francian Synod shall be admitted as soon as it shall give formal expression to its adoption of the Augsburg Confession as received by the General Synod. Now, that was satisfactory to the confessional wing as well as to the American wing. You've got to come in committed to fundamental articles the way the rest of us are, and then we'll argue about what articles are fundamental. All right, so that's kind of the plan. Well, all right, that is accepted by the convention. Francian Synod is not in. Well, the next day, the Francian delegates asked to continue their plea for membership, and they said, "We really wish the convention would reconsider this. After all, we're applying for membership in the General Synod, and by applying, that implies that we accept your confessional statement regarding the Augsburg Confession. We haven't said it yet, but we've applied, so that means that this is our position." Well, this sets off a huge fight. The confessional wing doesn't think this is good enough. You know, it's one thing to say fundamental articles, but it's another thing not to say anything at all. So there's a big fight over this, and the confessional wing loses. By a vote of 97-40, the General Synod accepts the Francian Synod in. Well, what about the 40? Well, a lot of those 40 came from Pennsylvania. That's where the confessional wing was strong. And their delegates walked out of the convention after that vote. And they said that they had, the General Synod had violated its constitution, that you shouldn't get in unless you accept the Augsburg Confession in some way, shape, or form, and these guys don't. We are out of here. All right. At the same time that this is happening, there's another issue developing in Pennsylvania, and that's at Gettysburg Seminary. Schmucker is retiring, and there's a push to get Charles Porterfield Croth elected as his successor. That fails. Croth loses. And instead, they choose another man who was more confessional than Schmucker, but still not belonging to the confessional wing. This inspires Pennsylvania to start their own seminary. And they do. This is Philadelphia Seminary. And Croth and others were called to teach there. So what happens is that in Pennsylvania, you are now ending up with two seminaries. Gettysburg, think American Lutheran, and Philadelphia, think confessional Lutheran. So that's happening at the same time as they're having this fight in the General Synod. Well, okay. The General Synod has a subsequent convention, 1866. And just speaking personally here, I've always found it interesting that this was in Fort Wayne. So this big showdown for confession of the General Synod occurred in Fort Wayne, in spite of the fact that the Pennsylvania delegates had walked out of the previous convention, they show up here to participate in the General Synod. And now, this has the American wing really upset. You guys vote out, you guys walk out, you set up your own seminary, and now you want to come back and start making decisions with us for us and our seminary? So, well, the delegates said, well, we just withdrew temporarily. Don't take that too seriously. But they did take it seriously. And the Credentials Committee, chaired by Schmucker, recommended that the General Synod not readmit the Pennsylvania delegate with its reservations about what violated the Constitution and what not. And that was approved. Pennsylvania could rejoin on the same basis as everybody else, accepting the way things were in the General Synod, Franken Synod, Melanchthon Synod, etc. But that was it. If you wouldn't go that way, you couldn't come back in. So the Pennsylvania Synod interpreted this as rejection and closure of the General Synod against them. And Pennsylvania was followed by other geographic synods, now leaving the General Synod. So you ended up with a General Synod, which, on account of the loss of the South and on account of the loss of its confessional wing in 1870, was now only a fourth of American Lutherans in America. Two-thirds in 1860, one-fourth in 1870. Now, it manages to survive for several decades thereafter, but it's no longer what it was, this big kind of national church body. It's more or less the East Coast Northern Lutherans who are in the General Synod, and not even all of those, because there are a lot of confessional churches out there as well. So we can say goodbye to the General Synod at this point in terms of the Augsburg Confession. They're not committed to it, and they're not going to be committed to it for a couple of decades yet. And that's another story that we're not going to worry about.
And I think we should take our break right here. We're talking about the General Synod and the battle for the Augsburg Confession with the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
Are you looking to gain practical insights and spiritual encouragement in a format that fits your life? Discover the treasures of Christ-centered learning with Concordia University, Nebraska. Utilizing an online, self-paced learning platform, Concordia Nebraska's new Studia Vitae program will offer a non-credit continuing education courses featuring lifelong learning opportunities in a variety of focused areas. Courses begin in January 2026 and registration opens soon. Learn more at cune.edu/CEU. That's cune.edu/CEU.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. We've been talking about the breakup of the General Synod and all the drama that ensued with all of that. Where do we go from here now the General Synod is being left behind? Now, what happens with the battle for the Augsburg Confession from here?
Institutionally, what happens is the creation of another national Lutheran church body called, probably inconveniently, the General Council, because it's easy to confuse with the General Synod. But we get another national church, Lutheran church body, in which Charles Porterfield Croth, the leader of the confessional wing that had withdrawn from the General Synod, is really kind of the major theological figure in providing leadership to the creation of this new organization, the General Council. The way this worked was that in the wake of their withdrawal from the General Synod, under Croth's leadership, the Pennsylvania Ministerium took the lead in trying to organize a subsequent national church body. And they sent out an invitation. I've got it here. Let me grab it for a second. Well, I shouldn't say I've got it. I've got the Missouri's in a reaction to it. But it's good. It's good. What they said, well, first of all, how did the Missouri Senate react to the General Senate? Well, I won't read this whole thing, but here's what they called it. Congregations of the pseudo-Lutheran, so-called General Synod accused it them of being the false brethren of the Reformed Methodistic, so-called Lutheran General Synod. All right. And so when Pennsylvania left, here's what C.F.W. Walther wrote. Scarcely any event within the bounds of the Lutheran Church of North America has afforded us greater joy than the withdrawal of the Synod of Pennsylvania from the Unionistic so-called General Synod. This is a step which will undoubtedly be connected with consequences not only of the utmost importance, but also of the most salutary character, and so forth. This was good. The Pennsylvania Ministerium passed a resolution in which they instructed a committee, this is Pennsylvania, to prepare and issue a fraternal address to all evangelical Lutheran synods, ministers, and congregations in the United States and Canada, which confess the unaltered Augsburg Confession, inviting them to unite in a convention for the purpose of forming a union of Lutheran synods. Now, this is in the wake of that 1866 convention, and so they're taking steps to organize a new national Lutheran church body. In preparation for this meeting, Croth wrote up a document called the Fundamental Principles, and this document affirmed what was dear to Missouri Synod's heart, that confessional subscription meant to agree with the confessions. What they teach is true because it agrees with the Bible. Not insofar as it agrees with the Bible, but because it agrees with the Bible. And this whole thing about fundamental is out. What the confessions teach, period, is in agreement with the Bible. And that's what we mean when we subscribe to them. So this is Croth now who's saying this, not the Missouri Synod. So this idea that they should form a confessional Lutheran church body was something that Walther and company thought was a good idea. So they had a constitutional convention. The synod's not starting, but they're going to come up with a constitution and then start. So this was held at the very end of 1866, and it was held in Reading, Pennsylvania. Representatives of 13 synods were there, and among those 13 was the Missouri Synod. Missouri Synod sent delegates to this council. A majority agreed upon a constitution and decided to start the very next year in 1867. Again, 13 synods were represented, but not the Missouri Synod. The Missouri Synod did not join. Now, there's a question of why didn't they join? Well, they didn't join because already by the 1860s, Missouri was concerned that some of the so-called confessional synods weren't really all that confessional. And the one that they had the most concern about was called the Iowa Synod. Because the Iowa Synod, this history has become probably more confusing than anybody wants it to be anyway, but I'll just say this about the Iowa Synod. They had formed under a constitution which said that the synod was committed to the doctrinal content of the confessions, the doctrines that had been articulated in the wake of the debate and arguments of the 16th century. Now, I'm not quoting it exactly, but it was kind of a limited confession. It's not to everything that was taught, but those that were the conclusions to the debates of the 16th century. And this was troubling to the Missouri Synod, especially when the Iowa Synod accepted pastors who were Sabbatarian again. You know, the small catechism and the large catechism are pretty clear that Lutherans, confessional Lutherans, agree with Jesus and St. Paul that the Sabbath is not binding upon the New Testament believers. But there were Sabbatarians in the Iowa Synod. There were also millennialists within the Iowa Synod. And the Iowa Synod, that these things are open questions. You can believe them or you don't have to believe them. It doesn't matter. They're open questions. So the Missouri Synod knew this about Iowa. And Croth is saying, well, Iowa, you come in. Missouri, you come in. And we'll all be one happy Lutheran family. And Missouri said, no, what we should do is we should have free conferences in which we discuss these things, come to an agreement on these things, and then join a new Lutheran church body. Now, this was not out of the blue, because in the 1850s, after the definite platform had been published, Walther and Wilhelm Lehmann, who was the head of the Ohio Synod, had sponsored a series of free conferences. Now, what do I mean by free? They didn't cost anything? No, they cost. You had to pay your own way, etc. But they were free in that they weren't sponsored by a synod. You went as an individual, went as a pastor who was, and the condition for participation was you had to subscribe to the unaltered Augsburg Confession. And they had had a series of these. They had four of these conferences, 55, 56, 57, 58. Or maybe I got it wrong. They don't have one in 1860, the Civil War. Somewhere I've got the number here, but won't worry about it. And they had gone through the Augsburg Confession and then gone article by article. And they had had people from all different kinds of synods. They had had Ohio, they had had Buffalo, they had had Missouri, they had all different synods represented, and then they had reached an agreement on the meaning of the Augsburg Confession. So for Walther, this was the way to go. Before you start a big general synod, get doctrinal agreement of the sort that they had gotten through these free conferences. Let's do more free conferences. Let's tackle some of these issues that are still outstanding. And let's come to an agreement on this. Croth said, no, no, no. He said, come on, we all subscribe to the Lutheran Confessions. Join, and then we'll talk about these things. So the Missouri Synod, that's not going to work for us. And so they had not done that, as a result of which they did not join the General Council. Other synods did, including the Ohio Synod that I just mentioned that had been involved in those free conferences. So there were synods that Missouri thought were really pretty confessional, or were getting confessional, that joined up. But pretty soon, they came to see that decision as a mistake, and they ended up withdrawing from it. Now, the whole story of their withdrawal and their concerns is pretty significant in terms of that history. So maybe we should do that on the next episode and talk about that.
Sounds like a good plan. Our guest for today, the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, the Forrest E. and Francis H. Ellis Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. Dr. McKenzie, thanks for the great conversation today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Looking forward to next time. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Goldseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.